Welcome to the International Schools Podcast, where we discuss all aspects of technology and life in international schools, with new episodes live every 2 weeks. This podcast is sponsored by Apps Events. We're a Google for Education partner and active since the launch of Google Apps for Education in 2006. We're a team of former educators and all experts in helping schools integrate Google into their schools and their classrooms. All training is customized for each school, and we make sure it has a lasting impact. Literally thousands of educators worldwide have earned their Google Educator certification with us, with our certification boot camps, and these take place every month and get your staff certified quickly. We also host Google Summits, which are fun, two-day conference-style events with concurrent sessions and keynotes delivered by experienced Google trainers, teaching on a broad range of topics using G Suite both in the classroom and in the school. Check it out over at appsevents.com, and we can bring any of these events to your school, which is an amazing way to build a Google community amongst your staff to support each other, plus to increase the profile of yourself and your school. The podcast is also brought to you by Acer for Education. People ask us what Chromebooks we recommend for schools, and after trying them all, quite literally, we always recommend Acer. We've been to Acer headquarters in Taiwan to be part of product discussions, and they're genuinely the best thought out, most cost-effective, and most importantly, durable devices out there. They're always innovating, including the first tablet running Chrome and the first convertible touchscreen Chromebook. The latest version of this is a Spin 11, which has a stylus and two cameras, and we highly, highly recommend it for schools. They, of course, have a full range of Windows laptops, and for esports fans, their Predator range is second to none. If you'd like more information, please just leave your email over at gg.gg/Acer Education. That's gg.gg/Acer Education, and we'll get right back to you. And now, on to the interview. Hello, and welcome to the International Schools Podcast. Today, I'm delighted to be talking to Jodie Cook from the UK, where I'm also from, as I've mentioned before. It's really interesting. She's an entrepreneur. She's been an entrepreneur pretty much since university, and we're going to talk about that. And she runs a social media marketing agency. But what's really relevant to us is she also publishes children's books, clevertykes.com. And this is really interesting because I know a lot of teachers who are interested in writing children's books and in this whole world. So we're going to talk to someone who's actually done it, who's worked out how to sell them on Amazon and worked out how to publish. So welcome, Jodie, to the podcast.
Hello, thanks for having me.
Cool. So Jodie, like, can we get a bit about your background? Obviously, we talked a bit beforehand, and I know you started off by studying business at university. So do you want to take it from there? Like, what was kind of your background that led you to be an entrepreneur?
Yeah, sure. So I left university and didn't really know what I wanted to do next. So I actually started a graduate scheme in social care. And then during that grad scheme, that was where I just worked out that having a job wasn't really for me.
And so I... A social worker, or what was the actual job you were working towards on that scheme?
So that was in social care management. So the idea was that the company I was placed with owned lots of care homes all over Sheffield, actually. And I was doing some of the marketing there. So helping them create a new website and getting them actually set up on social media, because this was in 2011 and it just wasn't anywhere near the huge thing that it was today. Sure. So it was in that year that I definitely got stuck in, made some good friends at that place. But that's where I decided that social care wasn't for me. And that's where I decided to move from social care to social media, which is maybe not a step that many people take, that bridge. So during that year, I was just constantly like brainstorming ideas of things that I could do when I finished. And so that was where I thought, well, I really like all this social media stuff I'm doing. I wonder if I could set about turning that into my future career. And so when I left, that was when I started being, a social media freelancer. And I wasn't really looking to start a business at first. I was just looking to create myself a job doing work that I really enjoyed to do. And I think that the travel side was really big because I wanted to be able to do it from anywhere. I had this like kind of amazing vision of just me and my laptop anywhere all around the world.
You read the 4-hour work week like Oliver.
Yeah, obviously Tim Ferriss is my god, like everyone else in the network that we're part of. But yeah, it was definitely that was what I wanted to do. And then with the social media agency, I started saying, this is what I do, these are my services, and then started getting clients. And then I don't really, there definitely wasn't like a business plan. It was sort of get clients and then get more clients. And that
Where were you at this point? So you've left the job. You talked about wanting to be like a digital nomad and travel. Had you already left UK and taken off, or were you still at home at this point? What were you doing?
I had given, so my husband, then boyfriend, and I had given ourselves 3 months of living with our parents after uni to get ourselves sorted out and completely self-sufficient to be able to live somewhere else. And also,
great way to do it. People think it's a bit shameful, but I did it when I went traveling. It's the best way to save money so you can take off and travel, you know?
Yeah. And we wanted to go and have our own base camp, but then we also wanted to travel around that. So yeah, it was a 3 month deadline, which I think worked for everyone. And I think we actually might have moved out ahead of then, but that meant that we were running a business. Well, I was running a business and my husband was doing other stuff, and then we could travel whenever we wanted. And then it was probably maybe about a year in when I had picked up clients, done a good job for them. They'd referred me to other clients and started growing and started building a team.
Can I just jump in? It's a lot of really good stuff. Like, how did you get your first client? Because that's always like, you know, like you're saying it very casual. Oh, I got all these clients, but a lot of teachers listening to this are probably interested in doing kind of marketing services and social media stuff. You know, everyone's on social media. So how did you get your first client? Did you show them the work you'd done at the social care agency, or how did you go about it?
I decided what I was going to call myself, like a social media manager. And then I told everyone I knew, like shamelessly told everyone I know. I knew I just absolutely banged on about it. Emailed everyone I knew, just kind of like an FYI, I'm starting this business, or I'm setting up as a social media manager. Let me know if you know anyone.
People you know already.
I think so, yeah. And even now, that's part of our strategy, just our really close network. And then someone who I was on my graduate scheme with, because how it worked on the graduate scheme, there was 25 of us, but we were all placed in different like companies. Someone who was on in a different company in Blackpool told her boss about what I was doing, and that company invited me to Blackpool to go and see them, to talk to them about doing work with them. Right. So that was my very first like prospect meeting, was a trip up to Blackpool to meet that company. I've hardly had any experience, really. I had the experience of doing what I did on my graduate scheme, but I just had so many ideas. And I think it was the ideas and the enthusiasm that, like, I must have just kind of got into that meeting and just like exploded all my ideas on everyone. Yeah. And then they just were like, yeah, sure. And then I was like, oh, okay, this is easy.
Did they agree to work with you like on a retainer on an ongoing basis, or was it just for one project then?
So that was one project. That was like I think it was a 3 month project, but that was such a big deal for me because it just gave me the confidence of having my first client. And then I thought, well, I feel like I've done the hard bit now. Like, obviously you have to do the work and you have to deliver it really well, but it felt like signing up clients after that. And I just had so much more confidence because I knew that people would go for it.
Great. So what was next then? So did you try to get another client, or did you take off traveling, or what were you doing in your life at this point?
I was trying to get more clients, and pretty much the first like five or six probably came the same way, which was friend of a friend of a friend, someone you randomly met at an event. And during that stage of running and like growing a business, I was just everywhere at every event. Just my goal was to meet as many people as possible, because I figured every person knows like, I don't know, 200, 300 other people. And therefore I'm just going to expand my network. So yeah, I was prolific, I guess, for the first 2 or 3 years, just building that network, because I knew that every single event I went to, or every single conversation I had, or every single like random coffee I had with someone, it always turned into like a later conversation, which then meant I got more clients out of it.
Great. So, I mean, obviously you mentioned travel. Did you take off around the world, or did you end up staying at home then? Where were you at the point?
How we do the traveling thing is we have a base camp, and then 1 month out of every three, we spend working and living from a different country.
Oh, that's interesting.
So that cadence works really well. It's not to say it wouldn't change in the future, but I really like having kind of 8 to 10 weeks at base camp and then 4 to 6 weeks away somewhere.
Yeah, it's funny when you said base camp, I thought you meant like Everest base camp. I was actually like, you call that your base camp, I got it.
Yeah, and I like to think of home as base camp because home is just wherever you are at the time. I don't necessarily feel like I need a kind of homey type like place in the traditional sense. So base camp at the moment is Birmingham in the UK. And then it means that we've been able to travel all over like Australia and America and South Africa and Europe and lots of cool places, but it's always for at least a month because that means that you can experience it more like a local than a tourist.
Yeah,
and that's the side of it that I like.
Yeah, me too. I used to travel like all the time, like crazy. And then I got married a few years ago and we've got a young son now who's almost two and actually just had another baby. So now we've got two. But like last year, we went to Asia for 2 months with my wife and our son who's like, he was just starting to walk. I mean, he took his first steps actually in Bangkok. So that was a great experience, you know, and he's pretty well traveled. He's been to Taiwan as well. He's been to all around Europe. And I know what you say, like we stayed for 2 months and that was great. You know, we actually got into the life of, in Thailand, and we went to Hong Kong and some other places as well.
Okay.
And we go to Austria a lot, and I'm really into the mountains. So I'm really looking at, you know, this Absavens is location dependent. You know, so we go down. I mean, last few years I spent like a month in the Alps in the winter. So yeah, I probably don't do it as structured as you, like 1 out of 3 months. But I definitely, you know, for me, especially when the kids aren't at school, you know, which I mean, you've gotten where we live. It's the kids don't go to school till 6. I mean, they're at preschool now, but you can take them out whenever you want. So for me, at least for the next 6 years, I'm planning on spending, you know, a few months a year working in different places.
Yeah, it's great.
Do you find it's because, you know, it's a lot of interest. You know, it sounds quite exotic for people who work in a job. You know,
yeah.
Do you find it difficult to actually work? And because everyone's different, but how do you work when you're on the road? Do you work in cafes? Do you work in your apartment? Like, how do you structure it so you get work done?
We started off like getting an apartment that was quite basic and then always working from coffee shops. And then it's moved up to making sure that the apartment is kitted out quite well to be able to have a workspace there. And then I think as the trips have gone on, because I think we're probably on our kind of like 20th or something now, we've kind of invested more in the Airbnb that we stay in and spent less time working outdoors and use the outdoorsy time as like when you explore or when you go have lunch and don't take your laptop. But you just get so much done there. Like I'm so productive. I try and time, because I write children's books and other books as well. And then I've got the agency as well, which is based in Birmingham. But I try and time it so that when I've got big, meaty concentration projects to do, I do those in the months when I'm away.
Cool. So let's finish off with the agency stuff because I'm keen to talk about that. And then the children's books, which is really interesting. Now, is your husband part of the business as well? Does he work together with you on this?
Yes. Yeah. Not at first. At first, he was doing other things like personal training and modeling and other kind of different things. So we've been together since we were 18. So we've kind of just done our own thing and then kind of joined up and started working together probably in the last 5 or 6 years. And then now he's my co-author for the children's books and we both do work at the agency.
Right. So did he just learn social media marketing? I guess it's not the sort of thing most people, I mean, you could study at university now, but it's pretty much something that people just learn by doing it, isn't it? That's the only way to really get good at it.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I did a business management course at uni and it had a marketing module on it. And I don't think social media was discussed once, because it just wasn't a thing then. It's like education hadn't caught up with it. Certainly when I went to see my careers advisor when I was 16, if I'd have said I wanted to be a social media manager then, they would have just gone, what? What is that? And it didn't exist. And yet 6 years later, it happened. So
did you run this business just the two of you then? Because I'm thinking someone who wanted to do social media marketing, because it's, you know, it's something that if you're good at it, you know, you could learn it fairly quick, I guess, to get to a base level. Do you have to outsource stuff, or can you handle enough workload to make your living out of it just with two of you?
So we are a team of 16.
So
the team are based in Birmingham. We've got amazing team leaders and salespeople who all do various bits of the kind of securing clients and looking after clients. So so Ben, my husband, and I, we kind of work like on the business. So we'll look after the website and make sure the leads are coming in and make sure everyone's happy. But in terms of actual day-to-day client work, we don't do that side of it. We've just got people who are far better than us at doing that kind of stuff. Which
that's
is great.
Way to look at it, because if you're good at sales, like that's the thing that's very hard to find people who can do that, you know. And if you can find people who can fulfill your product or your service, and it's always good just to be able to focus on getting clients in, you know?
Yeah, I think so. And we've got really amazing people in the team who focus on sales. And what works well is that because Ben and I focus so much on just making sure that the leads keep coming in, all our new work is from inbound leads. So when the sales team are speaking to people, they're not speaking to people, they're not doing any cold calling, they're just speaking to people who want to work with us. So I think that's a nicer experience for them. And it means we get clients who really are excited about working with us and what we can do.
That's cool. So how did you, I mean, obviously we've skipped over a lot of stuff here. How did you hiring people to get up to 16 people? Like what was the step? Did you just take on one and then more and more as you got the business?
Yeah, that was it. It was one person at first after about 10 months. I mean, the first time interviewing someone was the strangest experience of my life because I just had no idea how to interview someone. So it was a case of just like learning. It felt like playing businesses, and I just sort of asked the questions I thought I should ask and then tried to judge like if I'd like to work with someone or what my clients would think of that person. And then I hired the first person, who was a guy called Jason, who was amazing. And he actually is one of the co-founders of the Clever Textbooks. He helped us write them.
Right.
And then it grew from there. So it was, we were probably adding another account manager every couple of months. And that's built up. So there's 16 of us now.
You have an office like in Birmingham. Do you actually go to this office and work there, or do you work from home?
Well, so we are actually moving out of our office on Monday and into a kind of commercial property that we'll own. But there's a gap in between those two times, which is kind of working well because everyone's working from home at the moment. Yep. So, the whole time so far, we have had an office. I kind of go there like Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and then try and use Tuesday and Thursday as my like deep work writing days. And I think for me, it feels important to have that structure, because when I'm in the office, I want to be available and able to chat to everyone and not like with my headphones on, just ignoring people. So I try and kind of zone the week like that.
It's interesting. I bought a commercial space in Prague as I was looking, you know, I was looking for a long time. So you can always find good deals if you learn the area really well and look for stuff. So I've been looking at property here for a long time. And it's interesting because it's just me, you know, so I have kind of both like a combination of your two things. I mean, I was thinking I will have more team members here, but right now everyone who works in apps events, they're either in the UK, in Thailand, Philippines, in the US. There's someone else in Czech Republic, but she's in a different city. So it's just me here, you know, in this office, and I could have more people in, but I really like just like, you know, you were saying like having your home space, like this, like my offices, you know, but I've got two small children at home. So it's hard. You know?
Yeah, of course. I think it would be very different with kids around, because they're just going to want to play all the time. But if you can find a space to find like peace and quiet and get on with more deep work, then yeah, definitely. I think that's a good thing.
Some people do it with kids at home. I mean, I'm just not very good at that, I think. And it depends, you know, like it depends on your situation. Our house isn't that big. If you have a big house and you have like a nanny or something full time, like a lot of people in Asia do, then I think it's a lot easier to cope with. If you don't, I think it's tough.
Yeah, I know. I think lots of parents deserve medals, especially some of the ones who are accidental homeschoolers at the moment, who've kind of been, they might be working full time and now the schools are closed, so they've got kids to look after. Yeah. They deserve medals.
I know, seriously. I can't imagine it. Like just being at home now, you know, here we have quite a lot of freedom. I can still go to work, but if we were at home and the kids are too young, they actually, the preschool stayed open, which is kind of a strange thing. So they son's still going to school.
Okay.
But yeah, that will be, I can't imagine, that will be tough. I feel for these people.
So the thing that links JC Social Media with Clever Tykes is
let's go to that.
Because it might seem a little bit random that it's a social media agency and then it's children's storybooks. But the link between the two is entrepreneurial role models and thinking as to how I was kind of able to just start a business at 22 and not see it as a big deal, where it was quite a different path to what many of my friends and definitely the people doing my course at uni were taking. I started to like really think about why that was possible, and it all came down to role models. And it was just because I grew up with people around me, like my mom and like kind of friends of the family who just have had their own businesses. So to me, it was just this normal concept that you might go and start your own. Whereas if I was talking to some of my friends who'd gone down the kind of corporate career route, they wouldn't have ever like dreamed of starting their own business. They always thought it would be too risky or just not for them or just something that someone else did. So, yeah. And then it was also at the same time, I just basically started to think, what is it that means that someone feels like they can start their own business? And if they don't have role models in their family or in their family friends, where do they get their role models from? And if you look at role models on the TV, I don't know what it's like in Prague, but like the kind of British and American, like, people that you would see, if there were ever any people in business, they're always portrayed really negatively. So they're kind of greedy and mean and sweaty, and you never really see the hardworking side of business. You just see the kind of like people who are just money grabbing and evil, and they treat people badly, you know, like Mr. Burns in The Simpsons and Matilda's car dealer dad. And I don't know if you've seen the Lego movie, but there's a character in that called Lord Business, and he like glues all the Lego together so no one can play with it, and he's this big villain. And that's what kind of worked out, that that's what we're teaching people about what business people are.
It's interesting. Yeah, I mean, you asked about what Czech TV. I mean, I don't know, I just watch English TV, so I don't know what's just be Czech, but I've got no idea about that TV. But it's yeah, especially nowadays, because now you've got a kind of reaction of like, it's a thing in society, you're getting a widening wealth gap, you know, which is never good. So because of that, people on the sort of bad side of the wealth gap are blaming the rich people, which, you know, is probably some truth in that, to be honest. But then everyone that gets lumped into hating all business people. Yeah. You know, it's interesting, like, I think that's why everyone prefers the term entrepreneur, because it sounds a lot better than a business person. It sounds more, you know, like approachable. But like,
yeah, but that is so through the portrayal of business people as well.
Yeah.
Well, it was just exactly that got us thinking, how do we introduce role models to people that might want another career path than the one that they're kind of pushed into through school and university and graduate schemes? And that led to the realization that we needed to create some role models. And then it led to the next, what felt like a logical step at the time, which was to write them into storybooks.
Yeah, I mean, before we get onto that, it's interesting because I think, even if you've got a job, like, it's the reason this podcast exists is because a lot of teachers are looking to do entrepreneurial things or are already doing them, because there's no jobs for life. And even if you have a job, you have to start thinking about yourself like a company of one person, you know, and being kind of entrepreneurial in terms of your career. Cause like, and I've heard some people say, like, you know, your job's just another client, you know, at the end of the day, you know, like you've got to think of yourself like, even if you have a job.
Yeah, I think so. It's just being entrepreneurial, whether it's your own business or not, I think will serve someone really well for their whole career.
Definitely. So how did you end up? And obviously it's not easy to write children's books. What made you think you could do it?
The whole of the children's books journey was defined by two phrases: how hard can it be? Yeah. And what's the worst that could happen?
Yeah, that's great. Two great phrases. I love it.
So it was, I think I'm quite lucky in that I had two co-authors for the children's books. So the actual writing them, it was just a case of how hard can it be? It was like, we need to think of some characters. We need to think of some stories. We need to get the messages right. And then we need to write them. And it's almost like there's no kind of hidden advice that you can give anyone other than just write it. And even if you're putting a rubbish draft together, just do that and then keep improving it. I think for the three of us, it was because we had drafts going amongst three people, it probably made it a bit more complicated than a solo writer would have. But one of the stages that was really useful was hiring an editor and being able to give the manuscript that we were happy with to an editor to just look at it from a different point of view.
So were the three of you all partners in this venture, or did you hire the other two people?
So it's me, and then it's my husband, Ben, and then Jason, who was hired to help out.
Right. Okay. And did you hire an illustrator, or did he do the illustrations? Because that's obviously a big part of children's books.
Yeah, we hired an illustrator. It was friend of a friend of a friend who was just starting out in illustration. So actually we were, he told us the other day that we were his first client and his 100th client. And now he's doing amazing stuff now, doing lots of illustration work for lots of different clients. But we got him involved quite early on because we wanted him to really start thinking about the characters and what they would look like. Yep. And we've still got all the drafts that he made. So we've got the final versions that went into the books, but then we've got all the sketches because we thought that they would be really interesting for like for the future to kind of use as content. And then we definitely involved feedback loops in it a lot and asked a lot of different people for feedback with the manuscripts. Probably getting different people on board for different levels of feedback. So some you want friends who are just really honest. You want kids themselves because you need kids to like the books. And then one thing that we did was ask very specific feedback. That's very specific questions, sorry, to our feedback partners. There is actually a Tim Ferriss YouTube video on writing and proofing and the types of questions that you could ask a feedback person to answer. And those kind of questions are ones that we incorporated. And then after that, we kind of decided a cutoff point. We decided when we were not asking necessarily for feedback anymore, we were deciding when we were putting it out there and kind of making sure it like resonated with people.
But it sounds like you were writing multiple books at the same time. You didn't just write one book and get it out. You were actually working on a series of books to release at the same time.
Yeah, we wrote five.
Right. That's pretty ambitious.
How hard can it be? We decided that the reason why we wrote five is because what was so important is that these role models we were writing were relatable. So we wanted boys and we wanted girls and we wanted people from different backgrounds and we wanted people on different journeys because we knew that we couldn't just put one entrepreneurial role model forward. So yeah, five, but we've published four of them because the story of the fifth one kind of conflicts with the story of the other one. One of them is all about healthy eating. That's Change It Cho, which is one of the books that's out. And Bake It Benny, the one that we didn't release, he's all about the cakes. So I know. We didn't want conflicting messages within our own range.
So how did you end up publishing them? Like, did you have a plan in advance? Did you always know we're going to sell on Amazon? Are you going to use the self-publishing tools? Or how did you do that? And how did you plan that? Did you plan this in advance or was it after we've written them? And how did you come to publish and sell? Because that's a really, really key thing, I think.
Nothing was planned in advance other than we wanted to write storybooks. And I guess probably something to mention now is that we also wrote accompanying resources because we thought we want to be able to, for parents and teachers to be able to read the books and then almost go through each chapter and have questions and have discussion points and things that they could talk to the kids about. So we made like resources as we were making the actual storybooks. And I think maybe not having a plan for the distribution at the time maybe helped because it meant that all our effort went into the creative process and we almost didn't kind of cloud it by having deadlines or anything. Like we didn't set deadlines. We just did it all when we kind of felt like it or when we felt it was ready. So the actual selling, we didn't at first use KDP, which is what they're all on now. So Kindle's Kindle Direct Publishing, which is where you can use print on demand to make paperback.
Yeah, what is that? Can you explain what that is? What is KDP?
So it's where on Amazon you would upload your file and upload your cover, and then Amazon makes the book for you. And everyone that orders one, it gets printed from Amazon and sent straight to their address. So you don't actually have the books in your hands.
And is there a charge for that, or do you just pay per book sold?
Yeah, it's per book sold. So you would be on a certain royalty plan with Amazon. You would pay Amazon per book sold. But in terms of holding stock, you don't hold any. So it's no risk really. It's a very easy way of getting started without a huge cash outlay.
Right. Interesting. Is that what most people now who write children's books do? I mean, what would be the advantage of like looking for a publishing deal and approaching a publisher? Would it be to get some money up front and to get bigger distribution?
Yes, that's right. So approaching a publisher would just be a way of doing it where you very much focus on the craft of writing it and the publisher focuses on marketing it and the publisher does all the stuff with turning your manuscript into a book. I think there are pros and cons of self-publishing versus published. I guess the reason why we went down the self-published route is because running a social media agency, we were pretty confident in the marketing side of things. So yep. We'd had a little think about like how we would set up a campaign and how we would start selling the books. So that was why we went down that route. And I think actually we might have just been a bit more impatient, because we wrote to a couple of publishers and got a little bit far with some of them, but many of the responses would say, oh, okay, thanks for sending this. We're gonna think about this, and then in 6 months' time we'll let you know. And we were like, 6 months? What? Yeah. Like what? That just seems like really far away. So
how did you start? So basically, you said before you did the Kindle publishing, did you just set up a website and start selling the e-versions on the website, or how did you sell the first physical ones, or was it electronic versions first?
The first thing we did before we set up Kindle publishing and Amazon Print on Demand is we hired a printer and print and did a first print run of, I think we got 1,000 each of the first two books.
Wow.
And then they're the ones that we started selling. And we did.
How much did that cost you? What was it kind of cost to get 1,000 books printed?
I have no idea, because it was so long ago. I don't know. I can find out for you.
Yeah, I'm curious. Yeah, but it was in the thousands of pounds, I imagine.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, it must have been. But yeah, we were confident that we could sell them. It does get cheaper. The more you print, the less it is per item.
Yeah.
And then we did list them on Amazon, and then we had them on. I think we just set up a simple WordPress site with a WooCommerce element so that they were available. Yeah. And then that's when we started to set about doing the marketing. And then there were kind of three different prongs in the marketing. One was to sell them ourselves from the website. Another was to try and get stockists. And another one was to try and get a corporate sponsorship deal.
Right.
So if I start with the... if I start with the selling it ourselves,
yeah,
what we tried to do was build up a database and try and collect as many members of our target audience as possible into a list and send them things that would add value to them. So one of the things that we run now is we've got like a mailing list thing where people will send in their stories of how they were raised to be entrepreneurial or how they're raising entrepreneurial kids. And then we've also got an email list that will send out one email every weekday, which includes one of those stories. So it's kind of finding the theme of the books and then building out resources to do with that theme. And I've seen that done with children's books about all sorts of things. It's not just like entrepreneurial role models. I think if most children's books now will have some kind of theme. So working out how you can turn that into emails or into things that you can just keep in contact with people with is what I think is the way that you build a list and keep talking to people.
Sure. So how is it working that now? Where do most of your sales come from? And what do you focus more on in terms of the channels? Is it Amazon or is it your own website or is it a mixture?
It's now mainly Amazon, but we kind of... That was from going down those three different approaches. And then that's the one that we decided to focus on. So in the early days as well, we were kind of toying around with the idea of stockists. And we worked out that if you find the books buyer of different like stores, you can pretty much just talk to them directly and they have the power to say, yes, you can be in my store or no, you can't be in my store. Sure. So we started doing this campaign where we looked on LinkedIn for people who were buyers of books at all the different places we could think of, and then approached them and sent them samples and followed them up and did it like you would any kind of outbound prospecting campaign. And then we managed to get stocked in Harrods and Selfridges, which was quite a big deal for us because we went down there and we took some pictures and that was quite cool seeing our books actually on the shelves. And that was cool for like press, really. We got some coverage in some like local newspapers and local online sites, and then more people found out about it, and that helped to spread the message of the books being like, oh wow, Harrods and Selfridges have gone for them.
Yeah.
And like I don't think that would be that difficult for someone to replicate if they were writing children's books, because you just need to get in front of the right people. You need to spark an interest in them of your books, and then they have the power to put a trial run on the shelves. And then you could kind of do your marketing then to go in, like for people to go into the shops and buy the books so that they sell and so that that carries on.
Yeah. Do you still do that? I mean, are you in many bookshops, like physical bookshops now?
Mainly, a few, but mainly, mainly online bookshops. So you, even just through Amazon, you get to be in Barnes & Noble and in, I think we're on Waterstones online, we're on like Sainsbury's online, we're on lots of different ones. But most of our sales are through Amazon. Yeah. But it was actually through that experience of being in Harrods and Selfridges that made us think, hang on, the point of this whole project is social mobility, and we're trying to give role models to people who don't have them. And it just, something didn't quite sit right that they were in Harrods and Selfridges, when really we needed to be reaching people whose parents maybe didn't shop in Harrods and Selfridges.
Sure.
So that was when we set about thinking, we're going to find a corporate sponsor.
Yep.
And we decided that what we wanted to do is get one like corporate sponsorship, and they would put a series of the books in every single primary school in the whole of the UK, which is 24,000. And then we had an idea that we could have this online portal, which is where all the resources could be downloaded from as well. So we put all our efforts into finding that one corporate sponsor. And it was still along the lines of, how hard can it be? And what's the worst that could happen? And I think all that was going through my head was, we don't need 20 of these. We need one. We just need to find one person in that one room who can just say yes, sign this off, and then we can do that.
I'm curious, who did you get? Who did you get as your corporate sponsor?
So we got Lloyds Banking Group to go for it with that, which was just amazing. Like it was such a big month when they landed in all the primary schools in the UK all on the same day, and it came with a letter, and it was like, here you go, here are some books, this is what you can do with them, this is the link to our online portal, this is where you can sign up. And that massively like catapulted the brand. That was huge, because all of a sudden everyone knew about the books, and lots of different sales came from that, because you had schools who were buying even more resources for the school, and you had people going onto the website and finding out more and downloading all the other resources. So yeah, that was big.
Yeah, I had a couple of questions. First of all, like the corporate sponsor, how did you go about that? Did you just literally start emailing big companies and trying to find a person to talk to, or approaching people on LinkedIn? Like, how did you, because that's a big, you know, like to get these big sponsorship deals is tough. I know, you know, so how did you go about that?
It was very similar to how I started getting clients from my social media agency. I just told everyone what I wanted to do. I think if you kind of tell everyone all your goals, then they kind of, it makes each one sound less like you care about it. But if you every now and again have this one big goal that you really want to achieve, then I think people remember that. And I think your networks will try and help you out. So I think one of the things we did was just met with people who were vaguely in the same space, and just met with them over like a coffee or something, but not to ask them anything, or not to try and get them to do anything for us, just simply to be on their radar.
That's a really good piece of advice, because I was definitely the other person in my younger years, when I'd be like, I'm going to do this. And then you realize that people are like, what about the last thing you said you were going to do? You know, and then I actually stopped. I was just like, right, I'm only going to tell people about something when I'm actually doing it, you know, rather than I'm going to do this. It's like, I'm doing this, can you help? And that was a big change for me, because I was way too much on the other way of just telling everyone. I always had so many crazy ideas, you know, and like not most of them, 99% never happened, you know?
Yeah, I think it's important, because you don't want to be known as a person who just has all these things that they want to do and then never gets around to them. So yeah. I think if you're going to broadcast that you want to do something, make it the thing that you actually genuinely do want to do, and then make it the thing that you make happen no matter what.
And I'd add to it, like, tell people about it when you've already started doing it. Like, I'm doing this, as opposed to I'm going to do it, you know? Sorry, Karen.
So the person who went for it was... it was such a long chain of like this person told that person told that person. And it went through like seven different people before it got to Martin at Lloyds, who we sat down in a meeting with and who said yes to the project. But every one of those meetings or conversations that led up to that point was really important in getting the message across.
Interesting. And how, out of all the schools at 24,000 or whatever, how many actually replied and got in touch with you to say thank you, or to order more books, or just to let you know they're using it?
It was so many. So one of the things that we've got in the books is in the back of them, you can write to the character. So we've got like Willow at clevertax.com or Cody at clevertax.com. So we get so many emails from kids who've read the books who want to ask the character questions. And yeah, that is a time-consuming exercise. Yeah. Because, yeah, there's loads, and they're really cute questions as well. And it started to be that we'd get asked questions like, what's Cho's favorite fruit? And I was like, oh, I don't have a clue what Cho's favorite fruit is. So then you have to think, what would Cho's favorite fruit be? And then you have to think about it, and then you have to write it down, because I want to make sure that the message that we send out is consistent the whole time. So yeah, that is not really a scalable aspect of the work, but it's really nice because we get to speak to our audience. And then any reader that does write in to a character, they would get like back a kind of voucher for a free download from the website that they can then take forward.
That's great. The letting the kids email or write to the character. I guess it's by email. That's really cool.
Yeah.
I'm just looking at your website. Some are showing us out of stock. Does that mean just out of stock? Like you just stop printing, you just stop publishing them?
We have four books, and then we have a teacher's guide, and then we have an activity and coloring pack. Yep. The ones able to buy on the website are probably just three out of the four books, and the rest are all available on Amazon.
All right. So I'm curious, like because I guess you'd rather sell them on your website, because I guess the margin's bigger than Amazon. Is that right?
So with the four main books, yeah, we would rather sell them on our website, but the story guide book and the activity and coloring book are only available on print on demand. So you have to buy them via Amazon. They haven't yet got a kind of plugin that means that you can sell a print on demand item on your website and it is fulfilled automatically by Amazon.
Look, I think that's a great place to leave it, Jodie. It's really, really interesting to learn about your story, and the books are great. Everyone should go to clevertykes.com, clevertykes.com. And Amazon, I guess, search for Clever Tykes on Amazon. I'm sure you'll find it.
Yeah, that's right.
Anything else you want to plug?
Not necessarily. I mean, I think that just one piece of advice, if someone is setting up children's books, get your brand registered as a trademark, because then it means you can create a store page on Amazon. So if you went to amazon.co.uk/clevertykes, that's our store page. And I always think they look better than just random books all over Amazon, and then it means that you can display yourself there.
That's really good. Are you selling on like the German Amazon and the US Amazon, all the worldwide ones?
Yeah, all of them. And we've got an Arabic publisher actually, so they are available in Arabic too.
Wow. Jodie, thanks very much. It's been great to chat. All the best.
Thank you so much for having me.